Please help me welcome our speaker tonight, Dave Perry, and his home group is Dorchester from Boston.
There you go.
Dave Perry.
How's that? Did it work? They got it? There it is. Hey, everybody, I'm Dave Perry. I'm an alcoholic. Wow, thank you so much for inviting me back out. I love coming to Feet First. I've been coming out here for a long time now. And every time I get to come out, I get to see a lot of old friends, and it's just a real special place for me to be. It's part of my recovery, and I'm grateful and honored to be able to come out. So thank you. You know, I'll be honest. You know, when I come here and I feel what goes on in this group, I didn't feel that when I first got to Alcoholics Anonymous. When I first got to Alcoholics Anonymous, Alcoholics Anonymous was the group I didn't want to join. You know, the meeting I didn't want to attend, the book I didn't want to read, the sponsor I didn't want to get, and the steps I just didn't want to do. That was Alcoholics. I came here, guys, convinced. You know what I thought? I thought you guys were going to show me how to suffer in sobriety one day at a time. Just don't look at it like a lifetime of suffering, Dave. Just suffer one day at a time without a drink. You know, that's what I thought you guys were going to teach me. How was I going to do that, you know? Today, I know it's so much different. Today, in the is that beating me? Oh, yeah, okay. It is a little bit. I know. Today, I understand what Alcoholics Anonymous is. Thanks to God-inspired sponsorship, I understand today, Alcoholics Anonymous is nothing but the showing up business, nothing but the making it available business, nothing but the message delivery business. We have a message to deliver. God writes it. We deliver it. That's all we do. My sponsor said we're nothing but paper boys and paper girls for God. That's all we are. Just paper boys and paper girls for God. Paper lady, paper mister, and that's what I was taught. You know, my sponsor knew me. I'm going to have trouble with this, aren't I? Do you want me to go back to this one?
Yeah.
Can I?
That's going to work now.
How's that? Much better. Hey there. He said, I know you, Dave. I know you. Hear me right now. Understand what this is all about. You are not in the results business, Dave. You're not in the outcome business, Dave. You're not in the keeping score business, Dave. Put down the scorecard. You don't get them sober. You don't get them drunk. You're not that powerful. Your job is simply one thing and one thing only. Your job is to show up and try to carry a message. That's all we're asked to do here. That's all we're asked to do. Look at our 12th step. Having had a spiritual awakening as the, it's the result is what will happen when we carry this message and take these actions. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message. The 100 men and women who wrote that book and put these steps down on paper for the first time back in 1938 did not have to put that word in. They could have just said we carry this message to other alcoholics, but no, they said we tried because that's all we're asked to do. Look at it. My sobriety depended upon the sobriety of the guys I sponsored back in Boston. Trust me, guys, I'd be drunk tonight. You know? But instead, what I've done is I've just shown up and done what I was taught to do. Simply try. That point was driven home to me. I can still remember like it was yesterday. It was 10 years ago. A guy came to Boston. He took a podium one day, and my God, language of the heart, he hit me. I'm still talking about it to this day, this guy. He gets up at the podium, and here's what he says. He says, I've been sober 20 years, and in my 20 years of sobriety, he says, I sponsored over 200 men. He said, 200 men with 100% success rate. And they're like, whoa, how are you doing? All my guys are drinking. I said, how are you doing that? He says, no, don't get me wrong. A lot of my guys are drinking. Matter of fact, some of them are dead. But I've been happily, joyfully sober for these 20 years, and I call that 100% success. He showed up. He tried. My sobriety date's November 15, 2001. A little over, what would it be, 12 years, 9 months, and a few days ago I came back to Alcoholics Anonymous. And you guys, I say I came back, I've been here before. November 15, 2001 is not my first sobriety date. I was collecting them for years. reset, you know. In and out. For 12 years, prior to November 15, 2001, I'll be in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous for 12 years. Chronically relapsing. Couldn't understand what you guys had, more often than not, didn't want what you guys had. I'm here because some force and some power in my life has me here. You know, at first it was my work, then it was my family, and then, of course, the courts are in my life. So I'm coming to your meetings, and I'm grabbing my coffee, and I'm taking my seat on a nightly basis when I'm coming, and I'm looking around on a nightly basis going, my God, what happened, you know? My life was good once. I said, oh, my God, if all I have to look forward to is hot coffee on cold metal chairs hiding out in church basements the rest of my life, oh, shoot me now. I'm not going to make it. And I didn't make it. I was a meeting maker who wasn't making it. I didn't make it back then. I was having a hard time. You know, now, every stretch of sobriety I had during those 12 years when I'm in and out, every stretch of sobriety I had, whether I stayed sober a week, whether I stayed sober a month, whether I stayed sober a year, at one point, 3 years. I stayed sober in Alcoholics Anonymous during those 12 years at one stretch for 3 years, taking no action. And I thought the action was just coming to your meeting, grabbing my coffee, and taking a seat. I thought that was action enough. You know, there was no guidance, there was no direction, there was no steps, there was no sponsor, there was no book, there was no God, there was just me fighting the fight, hanging in there, doing this on my own. And every stretch of sobriety I had was all marked by the same commonality. I was miserable. Miserable. Sentenced. I felt like I was sentenced to sobriety. Sentenced to Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what it felt like. It just felt that way, you know. And I'm here every night, and I'm hearing you guys. I'm hearing you. You're taking these poems, you're carrying your message, you're sharing your stories, and you're promising me a new freedom. You're promising me a new happiness. I'm not getting any of that. There is no new freedom happening for me. There's no new happiness happening for me. You guys promised me I was going to be amazed before I was halfway through. I'm like, halfway through what? Lunch? My day? What were you talking about? I had no idea. Because I wasn't doing the thing you were doing. You see, I thought if I sat next to the happy, shiny men and women in here, I'd get what they got. It doesn't work that way. Look, I didn't get drunk watching the guy next to me drink. You know? I'm not going to find my recovery watching the guy next to me take action. Well, I take none. You know? And I know how to quit drinking. Quitting is not my issue. I know how to quit. My God, I quit 1,000 times. I could quit any time I want. Can you guys show me how to stay quit? Can you guys show me how to not start again? Or better yet, can you show me how to stay quit and stay comfortable doing it? This is my problem. Oh, sure, I can get sober. I can grab my cup and I can take my seat and I can hear your stories night after night after night. But unless I get comfortable here with you guys, I'm not staying. There's relief waiting out there in the bottle. If I'm comfortable here, I'll get comfortable out there with the bottle in my hand real quick. And so out I went, time and time and time again. But here I stand with you tonight, 12 years, 9 months, and a few days away from my last drink. And I didn't drive all the way out here to Quakerstown tonight from Boston to lie to you. I'm here to tell you the truth. Just want to jump back in the car and go, oh, yeah, fooled feet first tonight. Yeah, I did. Get over on them, you know. I'm here to report the truth. The truth of the matter is this. I've been happily, joyfully sober for the better part of these last 12 years, 9 months, and a few days. Happily sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. Set free. Free from the obsession to drink, free from the obsession to drug, free from the obsession with self, set free. How is that possible? What is it that marks these last 12 years, 9 months, and a few days that are so markedly different than those 12 years, in and out, in and out, in and out, burning my life to the ground twice over, destroying everything good during those 12 years? What is it that makes it so different this time around? One word every time I speak, one word and one word only. Comes down to me, sponsorship. Sponsorship. This time I got a sponsor. God inspired, God directed, God centered, God driven, God reliant, God conscious through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. A guy who wasn't afraid to tell me the truth from the first time we sat down. A guy who looked me in the eyes and said, I don't care what you think, I don't care what you feel, those are not my concerns. If what we have to do along the way, the action we have to take, and what I have to say and do with you along the way, Dave, makes you a little uncomfortable, makes you a little uneasy, well, so be it. He says, I'd rather step on your toes before I stand in your grave. I'm going to tell you the truth. You've been lying all your life and people have been lying back. He says, it's about time you heard the truth. He said, the truth of the matter is this. This is a program for the people who want it. Needing what we have means absolutely nothing. God knows I needed what you had. 12 years running, I needed what you had. Losing everything good, I needed what you had. But unless I wanted it, needing will mean absolutely nothing. This guy looks me in the eye and says, you what, you think of a drinking problem, Dave? You don't. You think you got a problem with cocaine? Uh-uh. Little problem with the judge, the family, the boss? No, no, no. You don't have any. You know what your problem is, Dave? I'm going to tell you what it is right here, right now. You're selfish and you're self-centered to the core. And until and unless you take a look at that exam and take action on it, you're not going to recover. You're just not. Understand me here, Dave. You're just not going to recover. I'll show you how. If you want me to show you how, I'll show you how to do that. He goes, my job as your sponsor is going to be real simple. I'll tell you exactly what it is. I'm going to take you by the hand. I'm going to walk you down a path. I'm going to ask you to hold my hand. And I'm going to take your hand. I'm going to walk you down this path. I'm going to put your hand in the hand of a power of grace. Trust me, he said, so I can put your hand in the hand of a power of grace and self that you can begin to trust. And then I'm going to step aside. I'm not the kind of sponsor that's going to tell you how to run your life. I'm not the kind of sponsor to tell you which means to go to, not to go to, where to sit, not to sit, who to date, not to date. I'm not the kind of sponsor you're going to have and call them every night. As a matter of fact, Dave, I'd really rather you don't, you know. Oh, yeah, right at me, you know. He says, my job is real simple, and it's one thing and one thing only. I'm going to get you to God, because the only problem you're really suffering from is a lack of power, and I'm going to help you find one. That's all this is about, he said. The meeting, the chairs, the tables, the coffee, the meeting, the list, the readings. It's all about one thing and one thing only. Let's get you to God. That's all we're designed to do here. And so began this journey. And you know what else this guy did? He picked up this book, you guys, and he turned to page 44, and he pointed out a sentence in that book that I read 1,000 times and never once saw. He said, we suffer from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. I guess I got to get me one of them. I need a spiritual experience. the only thing that'll conquer this thing. You know, but where, how, and what? You know, and by the way, this illness, we suffer from an illness. How is my drinking an illness? I'm just the guy who likes to drink every night, you know? I work hard, I party hard, rah, rah, rah. Why isn't the whole world out there with me? And if it is an illness, could I get a pill, please? Seriously, if there was a spirituality pill out there, trust me, I'd take one. No, I take two. I know how it goes. If one is good, two is great. Can I get 10, please? Let me get through the week with you guys. You know what I'm talking about? By the end of the month, I'll be shooting my spirituality pill. I know how it goes. Exactly what's going to happen. It's going to go. Banging that thing. You know what I mean? Let's get it in. You know? Well, how about this? If it is an illness, guys, check me in the hospital. Cut this thing called alcoholism out of me and let me go home. Let's call it a wrap. You know what I mean? 8 years ago, I had my gallbladder removed. Haven't thought about it since. Don't hang out with other gallbladder sufferers. You know, go to Measles Gallbladders and read books about gallbladders. I don't do any of that. It's all set. It's done. They took it. It's over. That's the kind of illness I'm looking for. But no, 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 not here. Not if you're the holding soul alcoholic. Not if you're the real alcoholic. Not if you're the hopeless variety alcoholic that this big book talked that I am. Seriously, who wants the kind of illness that requires that we turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as its solution? Who wants the kind of illness that requires that we do searching and fearless moral inventories as its solution? Make amends and restitution to everyone we've harmed or what, the course of our entire lives as its solution? Or, God forbid, lay our lives down on a daily basis for our brothers and sisters sick and suffering as its solution? Not me. 12 years saying, no, 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 not me, not me, not me, not me. Show me an easier, softer way. There must be an easier, softer way. Show me another way. I searched for a house. 100 men and women thought they could find an easier, softer way too, didn't they? We thought we could find it. We couldn't. Why? Because this is the easier, softer way. There's none easier nor softer when it comes to alcoholism. We got a thing called alcoholism here, guys. Catch it. Huh? Catch it. You see, those of us who are alcoholic can admit it. We get to recover. Those of us who continue to deny and fight it and kick and scream every step of the way are usually the ones that end up dying from the deal. And in order for this to be a deadly disease, and we know it is, some of us end up dying, you know. You know what else he pointed out? Same page 48, my sponsor. He says, Dave, you're holding the soul, real alcoholic, you only got two choices. It's like going to a game show, Dave. Hey, behind door number one, a life based upon spiritual principles. Behind door number two, doomed to an alcoholic death. And I'm like, ugh. Can I phone a friend out there? Someone help me with this one, you know? I'm having a hard 12 years I wrestle with this thing. I got my mother going, choose the spiritual principles, Dave. You know, I'm wondering just how bad an alcoholic death we're talking about anyway, you know? I need more information. So what was it like when I first got to you guys? I'll tell you what it was like in my life. I was 29 years old. It was 1989. I'm practicing law up on the North Shore of Boston. I'm doing pretty well. I'm about 3 or 4 years into my career at this point in time. On the outside, it looked pretty good. If you met me in a bar, I'd tell you all about that legal career in 1 or 2 minutes. You'd hear all about that right off the rip, you know, get that right at you. You know, I'd point out my $50,000 sports car parked right outside that window where we could see right from the bar or the pool table, keenly positioned. We go back to my 4-bedroom, 3-story brick townhouse in Medford right outside of Boston. I'd be wearing $800 suits and have all the trappings of success all around me. But you would also would have seen, had I known it existed, what you also would have seen, had I even known it was there, you would have seen a hole in the soul this wide that all the drink and all the cocaine and all the beautiful, shiny sports cars, townhouses, and $800 suits in the world just couldn't seem to fill. I couldn't fill the hole. And at 29 years old, 4 years into my career, my bosses looked at me and said, either you get sober or you get out. And I knew if I lost that job, I'd be unemployed and unemployable. So simply and solely to save my job, I jumped into a 28-day rehab. You know, and then you heard our friend read tonight the preamble. If the only requirement for membership here is a desire to stop drinking, well, that's a wonderful thing. Except I didn't have one of them. I had 3 bosses who had a desire I stopped drinking. You know, maybe they should have gone. I don't know. This wasn't going to work. My bosses at that point in time, they said I was a disgrace to my law firm. And I took issue with them. I fought on that. With hindsight and clarity and a lot of help from you guys along the way, I'm here to report to you guys I don't see it quite that way anymore. Matter of fact, I believe they were right. I was a disgrace to my law firm. I was a disgrace to my profession. I was a disgrace to my family. I was a disgrace to myself. And you know, the biggest kicker of it all was I didn't mean to be. I didn't want to be. It just kept happening. without my permission, even when I tried hard not to let it happen, it just kept happening. The one thing giving me any kind of relief out in this world is in a bottle. It's also the one thing destroying everything good. And I don't know what to do. And I'm lost in a drunken, staggering haze out there trying to figure it out all by myself. You know? And so began that journey, 12 years in and out, in and out, in and out. I look at those 12 years. What do I got to switch up this time around that I want to do a little differently than I did back then so I'm not repeating the same mistakes? One mistake I made back then was this. I walked in here convinced I was smarter than all you people combined. Don't need your help. Don't need your guidance. Don't need your suggestions. Don't need your instruction. Don't need your direction. Do not need your 12-step. Don't need your suggested program recovery. Don't need your sponsorship. And as far as your big book was concerned, two big thanks. I wasn't picking that up. Big book. A very large book, you know what I mean? I thought it was a novel, light reading for the alcoholic. I had no idea what you were doing, but I wasn't picking it up. I got this on my own, I said. Thank God I finally figured out there's nothing to figure out. It's all been figured out for us. I just got to let someone show me because I don't know how to do it myself. You promised me back then I never had to be alone again, but I wasn't hearing it, guys. I'm on my own out there. I got this on my own. I got this. I had a guy pull me aside back in Boston one night. I'll never forget it. He's trying to save my life, and I'm laughing at him when he said, you know, Dave, I got to be honest with you. He says, I never met anyone too dumb for this program, but my God, we bury buttheads like you all the time. Too smart for your own good. You're in and out, you're bouncing in and out of here, half sober, half drunk every other night. You're bouncing in and out like a pinball. You have no clue what's going on. You don't know a thing about alcoholism. You don't know a thing about a suggested program recovery. You don't know a thing about those 12 steps. You have no clue what that book's about. You don't even know what an alcoholic is, Dave, but you got this on your own. I get it. And then, hey, Phil, chill out, calm down, and I walked away laughing. The guy's trying to save my life. He was right. Second mistake I made back then was this, guys. I came in here convinced drinking was my problem. And for the sake of this conversation, I am talking about the drink, the drug, and all the things like it. They're all on my table. But it's Alcoholics Anonymous. Let's call it what it is. I got a drinking problem. Everyone in my world is telling me I got a drinking problem. My mom and dad are telling me I got a drinking problem. My brothers and sisters are telling me I got a drinking problem. The best friends in my life who are no longer in my life are telling me I got a drinking problem. My coworkers, my clients are telling me I got a drinking problem. It's got a little rough out there, you know? So I said, okay, fine. You know, if that's what's going on, you know what I'm going to do? I said, fine. If I got a drinking problem, I'm going to quit drinking. Yeah, there you go. That should do it. You know, I'm going to put the drink down. Quit drinking is what I thought. Problem with that was I wasn't a problem drinker. I was an answer drinker. Life was the problem. Drinking was the answer. It was my solution. It was magic. There was something in that bottle that set me free. You see, guys, when you take my drink away, you didn't just solve my problem. When you took my drink away, my God, that's when my problem just beginning. A world that otherwise terrifies me. I'm walking smooth with a drink in my hand. You're taking that away. I'm supposed to be okay. You kidding me? I'm not even coming out. I'm not coming over. We are not hanging. What am I going to do? How am I going to get by? You know? And I didn't cross some magical line years into my drinking and figure this out. This is the way it went from the first day out. Out of the gates, can I take back to October 73, 13 years old, little patch of woods in Reading, Massachusetts, on a Friday night with six of my friends before a junior high school dance? What a monumental night in my life. Monumental, life-changing night. I'm still talking about it. How monumental could it be? I remember like it was yesterday. It was a Friday night. It was a cold October night. I remember like it was yesterday. Now, I had all the pains, pressures, problems, and fears, doubts, and insecurities that any 13-year-old had. I had a few extras. I was the goofiest looking kid you ever saw. You know, the triple lens glasses, big nose, buck teeth, 6'1" by the age of 7. You know, every class had when it was me, you know. Give me 15 minutes in the woods that night. That's all it took. 15 minutes with that bottle to my lips, and my God, my world changed. Now, I'm not saying the glasses didn't fall off, the nose didn't shrink, the teeth didn't straighten. I didn't drop an inch or two. You know what happened as best I can describe it? The fear went away. I liked you guys better when I was drinking. I liked the world around me better when I was drinking. You know what? I liked myself better when I was drinking. I was okay. I was enough. I was all right when I was drinking. And I made a decision that night. I didn't even know I was making it, but I did. I made a decision. Stone cold banged out a decision that night. I made a decision that night to make that drink the most important thing in my life. I did. I made it that night. I'm going to make this the most important thing in my life. And as the years would go by, the drink and drug and all the things like it became the most important things in my life. And to keep it the most important thing in my life, I'm going to pay a lot of prices. Oh my God, my seat in Alcoholics Anonymous, that seat didn't come free. Heartache, misery, loss, frustration, loss of careers, loss of opportunities, loss of houses, material possessions, loss of the respect and love of my family at one point. My God, loss of friendships. My God, loss of my freedom. I ultimately lost that too. Come on, with prices. Huge and heavy price tags hanging off my chair. How could I best describe it to you? How about this? 21 years old, I walk into a liquor store downtown Boston, Boylston Street. I walk in the back, I grab open a 12-pack of Budweiser, I walk to the front, pop it down the counter. The guy looks at me, I look at him. He says, that'll cost you $14.95 in every real friendship you've ever had. I paid it. 31 years old, walk into a bar like a shot and a beer, please. Bartender looks at me, I look at him. He says, that'll cost you $8 in your marriage. I was 41 years old. I remember like it was yesterday. I was on Tremont Street downtown. I walked into a liquor store, head to the front counter, point to the top shelf. I'd like that fifth of tequila, please, the mezcal. The guy grabs the bottle, pops it down in front of me. I look at him. He looks at me. He says, that'll cost you $17.95 and your license to practice law in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. I paid it. Sounds about right. Wasn't that bottleneck more than my career? Wasn't that bottleneck more than my family, my friendships, my material possessions, my future, my security, my sanity, my freedom? I mean, what price you pay? What'd your seat cost you? Any freebies? Anyone getting free? Hit the lottery and come to AA? Anyone? I don't know. You know? I don't have to go on that. Prices we pay. You get it. We get it. So anyway, so I get through high school, get through college. Nothing but a four-year blackout for me. Wish I could tell you more. My friends said I had fun. It's cool by me, you know. I graduate 4 years later with a degree in economics in a cocaine addiction. And off to law school I go. Busy, busy, busy. Things to do. You know what I mean? I get through law school in 3 years, pass the bar, first time out. Now I'm into my career, 27, 28, 29 years old, and here's what's all falling apart. In school, I stayed a step or two ahead of the drink. 28, 29 years old, it's all falling apart. I'm no longer a man who's in control. I am 29 years old, and I have lost the ability to control my drinking. I am 29 years old, and I live in a body that cannot take a drink safely and don't even know it. I'm 29 years old, suffering from an allergy to alcohol I don't even know exists in my body as I'm pouring a fifth of whatever down my throat every night. I'm 29 years old, and I'm absolutely out of control. The drink is taking over. It's making choices for me I don't even want to make, you know? And that's when my bosses looked at me and said, either you get sober or you get out. And on July 5th, 1989, 29 years old, I jumped on a plane and flew out of Boston, Massachusetts to, of all places, a place called Ephrata, Pennsylvania, in the Lancaster County farmlands or the Amish farmlands at a place called ARC, the Terraces. Some of you guys may remember it. And so began this journey. Now, I know when I got out there, and I'm absolutely positive because I know it to be a fact, there were a lot of God-inspired men and God-inspired women at that facility carrying a message of hope and a message of love and a message of recovery, a message of the 12 steps. They were carrying a message of unconditional love and service. My God, they were carrying a message of God, and I was hearing none of it. Why? Because we have a principle in here. It's a real simple one. You can't say the right thing to someone who's just not ready to hear our message. You just can't. You could have Dr. Bob to my left, Bill Wilson to my right, and Lois pouring coffee, and I wouldn't heard a thing out in Everett, Pennsylvania back in 1989, you know? And so began the journey. 12 years, in and out, in and out, in and out, in and out. I can't tell you much about my stay and effort. I was there for 28 days. The best I got for you, arts and crafts. Yeah, we did. We did some arts and crafts. When I had a moment of clarity, check it out, a little moment of clarity. I'm sitting at this table with 17 tough guys from up and down the East Coast. When I look up and I said, oh my God, you guys, what is wrong with this picture? I'm a 29-year-old attorney sitting in the middle of Ephrata, Pennsylvania on a Wednesday morning at 10:30 doing spin art. Someone shoot me now. This is awful. And could you please pass the purple? I need a little color in this deal, you know what I mean? 28 days later, 15 pounds heavier, some nice artwork under my arm. And what am I doing back in Boston? I'm back in Boston going, recovery, I'm in recovery, shouting it from the hills, you know? You know, like, I'm not in recovery. I'm saying it because you're saying it. That was my program of recovery. You say it, I'll say it. Just parroting back. I was stock raving sober, maybe when I was coming in, maybe not. Didn't matter to me. Drunk, sober, in and out, bouncing through the halls. Talking to a bumper stickers, to be quite honest. Hey, Dave, want to go for coffee? Whoa, easy does it. I don't know. You know, I'm gone, you know. out of my mind. You know, and like I say, I might stay sober a week, might stay sober a month, once stay sober a year at one point. Matter of fact, I stayed sober 3 years at one point, taking no action whatsoever, just like coming to your meetings and fighting the fight, hanging in there, suffering and sobriety. That's what I told her, suffering and sobriety. And I tell you that story about 3 years because it's important. Let me fast forward for 1 minute. It's November 2001, my sobriety this time around. I'm 2 weeks and 1 day. I'm 15 days sober. I land in a place called the Miller House, Falmouth, Massachusetts on Cape Cod. I just got there that day. I'm out back having a smoke. A counselor's aide named Joe, who still works there to this day, came out there to say hello. And here's a classic example of God using us with or without our permission. God does not need our permission to use any one of us anytime he wants. Willing or unwilling, conscious or unconscious, instruments of a power greater than ourselves. And that's what this guy Joe was. And if Joe was standing here, right now, you guys, and I said, hey, Joe, remember that night you met me at the Miller House, first time out back having a smoke, and you said da 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 da, I bet you all likely, guys, Joe's probably going to say, you know, Dave, I don't quite remember that. 12 years, 9 months, and a few days later, I'm still talking about it. Here's what he said. He said, you know, Dave, if all you're doing here in Alcoholics Anonymous is looking for one more day of sobriety, and you think that's all we have to offer, and he says, and you're doing nothing whatsoever to change the man you brought in. You're taking no action whatsoever to change the person you brought in. He goes, my God, Dave, isn't it just a matter of time? He says, my God, Dave, how long can you hold your breath? Huh? How long can you hold your breath before you're going to pick a drink back up again? Doing nothing to change the man, doing nothing to change the woman, doing nothing to change the person that you brought in. It's just a matter of time. How long can you hold your breath? And the guy was right. 3 years. It's my experience. I can hold my breath in Alcoholics Anonymous 3 years taking no action. No action but coming to your meetings. That meeting maker that I was, white knuckle sobriety, stock raving sober out of my mind, 3 years, best I got. And what do I do at the end of my 3 years? I did what anyone in this room who's relapsed, whether you stayed sober a week, a month, a year, or a decade, if you relapsed after your week, your month, your year, or your decade, you did what I did. You made a sober decision. Of course it was a sober decision. I made a sober decision after 3 years of drink, holding that drink in my hand that night, drinking was not, I did not have a drinking problem that night. I couldn't have. I hadn't touched one for 3 years. How do I got a drink? I don't have a drinking problem that night. What I got that problem, know what my problem was that night? I'll tell you exactly what my problem was that night. My problem that night was my sobriety. My ugly, miserable, untreated, I can't stand it for another second sobriety and my inability to live comfortably in it. I was solving the wrong problem again. You want to know the leading cause of relapse? I'll tell you what it is. Sobriety. I don't know about you, but every time I picked up a drink, it's like I couldn't stand being sober for another second. Bad case of sobriety going on. And powerless? I was only going out for the weekend. I said that to someone. Save my seat. Back Monday. You know? Like I have any power over this deal, you know? And that weekend lasted 9 years. And during those 9 years, I'll burn my life to the ground twice over, destroy everything good in my path. Because here's what I'll do, guys. I'll drink till I can stand it no more. Then I'll get sober till I can stand that no more. Then I'll get drunk till I can stand that no more. Sober, drunk. And before you know it, there goes another decade of my life. There goes another 10 years wasted and left in my path to wake and destruction a mile wide because I blow like a tornado through the lives of everyone who loves me and wake up maybe yet again, maybe in another nut house, wondering what happened. Looking around, seeing nothing and no one left. Walking and crawling out of the place all by myself, trying to build something out of nothing. Again. And I'm tired. And I'm getting tired. You know, this book gives us real simple instructions, huh? Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we're like now. For me, in the end, it's November 2001. I'm a walking show of the man I used to be. I'm unemployed and unemployable again. I'm trying to put a law practice together by day while I'm walking the streets of Boston at night doing whatever came next to get a drink. All my friends are gone. I'm all by myself out there. Tears in my parents' eyes on a nightly basis put there by my actions that I'm powerless over stopping. My mom and dad are not alcoholic, but trust me, they suffered from alcoholism. Mine. Brothers and sisters, wonderful people, at this point in my life are scared of me. They don't want me in their houses. My little sister looked at me a month before I got sober and said, my God, I don't even know who you are anymore. How does that happen? Every bit of potential, ambition, and drive I once had are long gone. I can't even get out of bed unless there's a bottle or a pipe waiting for me. Honor and dignity are lost in the dust of my addiction. Morals and values warp beyond any sense of recognition. My bottle's empty. My wallet's empty. My life's empty. I'm empty. Living, one might say, to drink. And when I live like that, I got to drink like that. When I drink like that, I got to live like that. And on it goes. My last night out there was a Wednesday night, November 14, 2001. A night like any other for me. I copped an eight ball. I smoked it. I banged back a fifth of tequila so I can forget about you and the rest of the world. And I closed some dive bar up in Lowell, Massachusetts. Like I closed every bar I've ever been in. Lights are flashing, Dave. You got to go. You got to go. I walk up to the bartender. She's looking, waiting for me to kick that drink back so I can get out of there. I take that drink and I kick that last sip back, putting that empty glass back on that bar, having no idea that was going to be my last drink to date. I say it all the time. Had I known that would be my last drink, guys, trust me, I would have ordered two. One for the road. I got to go, you know, long ride, you know. I had no idea. I believe from the moment that empty glass, from that moment to this, I've been living a plan, not my own. I did not chart this course, design the destiny, or plot the path I've been walking for 12 years, 9 months, and a couple days. This is not my doing. Not my plan. Some power far, far greater than me jumped on in. I went home that night and passed out, ready to get up and just do it all over again the next day because that's all I knew. But God had another plan. That'll give you an idea what this alcoholic was like. Here's what happened. On the morning of Thursday, November 15, 2001, my sobriety date, I woke up at 5:30 in the morning to a knock on the door, unlike any other knock I've ever heard in my entire life, and on the other side of the door stood the FBI, the DEA, two state and two local looking for me, and my run was over. The end of a long, sad, heart-wrenching, and oftentimes quite despicable run was over. Next thing you know, I'm standing in front of the United States Federal District Court judge, Federal District Court, you know, whole nother world with those feds, I'll tell you that right now. You know, we're not in Quakertown District anymore, you know what I mean? We're downtown feds, you know? What happened was that morning, you guys, was this. I was one of 38 guys arrested from Miami to Boston, 38 of us up and down the East Coast. 17 were in Boston, I was one of them. Next thing you know, I'm standing in front of that judge, and the judge is telling us the charges. Check it out, the charges. Conspiracy to possess and distribute 500 kilograms of cocaine. Kilograms. I buy eight balls. You got the wrong guy. It's all big mistake. I should have been so lucky to be quite honest. Can I see one?
Can I hold one? Wait, you know?
And I'm telling you, I got eight Colombians to my left, eight Colombians to my right, and there's Dave Perry in the middle. It's like, what happened here? This is all wrong. And if you were standing next to me that morning with that judge telling us that none of us are getting bail, the charges carry a potential of 10 to life. Kind of make a phone call for 72 hours in the federal system. And if you were standing next to me, shackled at my ankle, waist, and wrist to these 16 strangers, I would have told you this is the worst day of my life. Undisputed, bar none, worst day of my life. But I drove out here to Quakertown tonight to let you guys know I don't look at it that way anymore. I'm here to report to you with every cell in my body, with every ounce of my being, I'm here to report to you what I believe to be the truth. No reservations whatsoever. I believe that's probably the greatest event that's ever happened to me, and I believe without 1 ounce of reservation that God sent those men. He sent them for me. He had a plan with my name on it. Like he's got one with all yours too. I'm not unique here. Problem was, every time his plan started to kick into action, I kept getting in the way. My sponsor talks about direct hits. Kept my attention. That morning was a direct hit. He got my attention. I'll tell you when the worst day of my life was. I know when it was. Saturday, November 17, 2001. 2 days later. And 50 years to the day my mom and dad were married, and 50 years to the day we're celebrating their wedding anniversary back in Reading. Now, the fact I'm not at this wedding anniversary does not make this the worst day of my life. I've missed family events along the way. This is nothing new. The reason it's the worst day of my life is this. I'm in a place called Plymouth County Correctional Facility in Plymouth, Massachusetts. I'm in a room about 20 times the size of this pavilion, 80 bunk beds spread across the place. They call it New Man, where they put us before they bring us to our individual cells. 79 strangers running around me, and I'm sitting on my bunk, and what I'm doing, I'm staring at the wall, and what I'm looking at on that wall is a payphone. And I'm realizing for the first time in my life, if I want to get up, walk across that room, and pick up that receiver. I got no one left. I can't think of the name of one single solitary person left in my world who wants to hear my voice on the other end of that phone have anything to say back to me. How microscopically small my world had become. And realized it, sitting on that bunk. I wanted to call someone, and I had no one left. And that's my bottom. I found mine. I don't want to let dip any deeper, drop any lower, slide any further. That's it. That's it. You know, I was at a conference about 10 years ago in Baltimore when I heard a woman take a podium. 400 of us in the room. She was talking to me. You know what she said that day? She asked a question. I'll ask the same of you. She said to me, she says, "Hey, have you found that place in your life where you've got no place left to go but to God? Have you realized that there's no human power on earth that's going to relieve us of our alcoholism? And our job is one thing and one thing only here. We need to find a power by which we can live in. It has to be a power greater than ourselves. That's all we're doing here. That's what this whole thing's about." And I don't know what my prayer was that night, you guys. Something as simple as, "God, what's wrong with me?" That's a prayer. Because it got answered. 6-7 days later, I got pulled out of that cell. I'm back in front of that judge. I'm here but for the grace of God, the compassion of the federal government. They gave me an opportunity to find my recovery if I wanted it. Needing it meant absolutely nothing. And they put me in the Federal Pretrial Services Division. The charges weren't going away, but they gave me a chance to get better if I wanted it. And so began the journey. I'd spend the next 10 days in a detox, the next 4.5 months at that place on Cape Cod called the Miller House, onto a halfway house in Boston, 2 blocks from the courthouse I used to appear in. I'm living in a halfway house. And onto a sober house. And for the first 8 months of my sobriety, miserable just like those 12 years in and out. Suffering in sobriety, same as before. The only thing keeping me sober, one thing and one thing only, fear. You see, if I pick up a drink, the federal marshal's picking me up and I'm going back to Plymouth. But fear is not our solution here. You know it and I know it. It's a temporary fix, but it's not our solution. But God had another plan in store. Another miracle in my life happened on July 21st, 2002. 8 months sober. Here's what happened. An old friend of mine, a lot of you guys know him, Steve Farnsworth. Steve. I knew him back in the 90s. He was stock raving sober like I was, except I went out. He didn't. 8 years sober. 1997, he got sick in Boston, had to go down to Baltimore to move back with his family. Now, down in Baltimore on a Monday night outside of Baltimore in a town called Elkton, Maryland, he went to a meeting and he heard the late, great Tom Flynn take a podium that night. And Tom carried a message of hope and recovery that Steve never heard before. Went up to Tom after that meeting and said, "Tom, I never heard anyone talk the way you're talking. Will you show me what you're talking about?" And that's the night my friend Steve turned his ugly, miserable sobriety into recovery and started walking down this path with that man. Now, I don't know this is going on with Steve. I'm not paying much attention to that. But he's paying attention to me. He's calling my sisters, making sure I'm not showing up dead. When he heard about the arrest and the fact that I was back in treatment, he calls me. Here's what he says. He says, "Dave, my sister's got a cottage up at Lake Winnipesaukee, New Hampshire for a week. I got 3 days off from work. I'm flying into Logan on Sunday, July 21st, for 3 days up at the lake. Want to go?" Seconds and inches how our lives can change, huh, guys? What if I said no, didn't feel like it, couldn't get time off, whatever? I wouldn't be here tonight if that were the case. I'm telling you that right now. I thought it was just a little vacation, 3 days up in New Hampshire with an old friend. I had no idea God was sending me my sponsor. I picked him up at Logan that morning, you guys, and check this out. He gets in my car. He looks different, sounds different, acts different. He's inexplicably different. There's something about his eyes, fresh skin and glowing. The guy's on fire. Absolute fire. The exact same experience Bill Wilson describes near the end of that bleak November in 1934 when Ebby came to dinner is exactly what was going on with me and Steve in that car that morning. And within 15 minutes of talking to this guy, he gave me the greatest gift that one alcoholic can give another. He gave me a little bit of hope. Hope that maybe, just maybe, I could get what he had. Hope that maybe, just maybe, I could feel like he felt. Hope that maybe, just maybe, I could look like he looked. Hope that maybe, just maybe, I could get set free. Hope that maybe, just maybe, the pain would stop and the tears would stop and the heartache would stop and I get set free. You know, what he had was attractive. He gave me that greatest gift. And within 15 minutes, I started to feel it. You guys, he talked about this big book like the thing had a heartbeat. He talked about God like he just came from having lunch with the guy. You know what I mean? It was powerful, it was attractive, and I wanted what he had. I said to him, I go, "You're talking about these steps, though, aren't you, Steve?" I go, "When do I start these steps?" He goes, "When do you want to recover? When do you want to get better? How long are you going to wait here, Dave? Well, that's just it, Steve. I'm only 8 months sober. I should wait a little while, don't you think? He goes, where are you getting that? Where? Nowhere in our history, nowhere in our literature, nowhere in our steps, nowhere in Alcoholics Anonymous to say you have to wait. As a matter of fact, it says just the opposite. If you decide you want what we have and you're willing to go to Wayne Lane to get it, you're ready. You're ready. I don't care if you're throwing up in your last drink. Wipe off your mouth. If you decide you want what we have and you're willing to go to Wayne Lane to get it, let's go. Let's get started. But I said, 8 months, Steve, I'm a little early. I still think I'm a little early. What if I make a mistake? He goes, make a mistake? He says, my God, Dave, how long did you drink? I said, 25 years, Steve. He goes, a little late to worry about a mistake, don't you think? He was right. He goes, look at this, Dave. Look. How long, he says, how long are you going to let your half measures avail you nothing? I'm watching 12 years of half measures availing you nothing. How long are you going to let your old ideas virtually kill you? The old ideas are killing you. Your results are nil. How long, Dave, are you going to steer the turning point just to turn around and walk away like you've done for 12 years running? How long, Dave, are you going to come to a 12-step program and ignore the 12 steps? In my case, 12 years, just my lucky number. You know what I mean? I said to him, I said, Steve, I hear you, but hear me right now and hear me well. You just heard my story. You know what's going on. I got real life problems going on in my life. Real life problems. I got federal charges hanging over my head that carry a possible 10 to life. I'm going to get disbarred for the practice of law. I don't have a friend left in the world. My parents are in tears. My brothers and sisters aren't talking to me. I don't got a cent left in the bank. The IRS is all over my back. I don't have a career. I don't have a job. I don't have a house. I don't have an apartment. I'm living in a sober house, a block from the courthouse I used to live. Come on, man. Give me something real. Give me something real. This guy's coming to me with prayers and inventories. I'm looking for lawyers and loans, you know what I mean? I got real life problems going on. He looks at me, he goes, I get it, Dave. I hear you. I see. You got problems, huh? You got walls up. I get it. Walls up everywhere. He goes, walls up between you and your family. Walls up between you and your friends. Walls up between you and your finances. Walls up between you and your career. Walls up between you and the law. Walls up, walls up, walls up. Everywhere you turn, you got walls up. What I'm here to tell you is this. If you just walk down this path with me, 3 feet behind me down this path, let me show you how to do this thing. I'm going to guarantee you one by one by one by one by one by one by one, every one of those walls are going to come crashing down. And the most amazing part of it is this, Dave. Wrap your head around this. You'll have nothing to do with it. I'm going to show you a way to stay about God's business and let God take care of yours. How's that sound? How's that sound? I'm there. How's it sound? Give me something real. Give me something I can see, touch, and feel, Steve. I need something real here. I got real life problems. And what I'm here to report to you guys is this. Everything that man promised me, everything he promised me that day, everything he said about those walls and those problems in my life, every one of those things he promised me came true. One by one by one by one. Every one of those walls have come crashing down. And I'm standing here before you tonight with not one of those walls existing in my life. And all I did was just what he told me to do. He showed me, didn't tell me, he showed me how to stay about God's business and let God take care of mine. But I said to him, I see him at the wall. Everywhere I go, stare me in the face. There those steps are. I said, I don't understand these steps, how they work. I don't agree they're going to work. I don't even believe they're going to work. I said, Steve, how do you do these steps if you don't understand them? How do you do these steps if you don't agree with them? How do you do these steps if you don't even believe they're going to work in your life? He says, David, that's just it, man. You don't have to understand them to make them work, agree they're going to work, or believe they're going to work. I went, how do you do them? He says, all you have to do is simply become willing to follow a person who's already done them. He said, the greatest promise, Dave, is on page 58 in this book. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. He said, can you walk behind me down a path? Can you stay 3 feet behind me down a path? You don't got to say what I say. You don't got to think what I think. But if you do what I do, you're going to get what I get. Because this is a program of action. Your recovery's not in your head, Dave. It's not in your head. It's not what you think. It's not what you hear. It's not what you see. It's not what you say. It's not what you read. It's not what you study, Dave. It's all about what you do. Or in your case, what you haven't done. There's a whole bunch of things we do here. The action laid out right in those steps, directions right in that book. And if you just let me show you how to do it, I'm going to guarantee it's all going to change. And that's the day I turned my ugly, miserable sobriety into recovery and started walking down the path with that man. And immediate action will get you immediate results. By 3 that afternoon, we're turning to page 63 and I'm taking the third step. The most powerfully life-changing prayer I've ever said in my entire life is on page 63 in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. That prayer has changed my life. I had no idea the impact back on July 21st at 3 in the afternoon when I was taking that step. I had no idea the impact of becoming an agent of God, secret agents of God. That's all we are here. You know what I mean? The 5 words on page 62 that changed my life, we took on a new employer. I got a new boss today. I got a new job today. And with that comes new job duties today and every day. And with that comes a rate of pay unlike any other I've ever received in my entire life. I'm here tonight at your invitation. Thank you for having me. But to be quite honest, God sent me. I'm just doing my third step. I'm just showing up for work. This morning, I got on my knees like I do every morning, punching in God. I'm punching in. What's on my to-do list today? Praying only for the knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. What would you have me do today, God? Show me in obvious ways. He said, drive that car, jump in that car, drive down to Quakertown, go to Feet First and carry my message. I go, I'll get there, God, I'll get there. What do you want me to tell him when I get there? He says, I'll tell you when you get there. Just get there. You know, it's that simple. Just get there. Just show up. He'll take it from there. I asked him out there to give me the words. I get back in the car. I said to my sponsor, Steve, third step done. Woo, let's get some dinner. He goes, no, let's get a notebook. He drove me to a country store, sent me in for a notebook and a pen. I came back out, and the man stood over me while I wrote a fourth step. Resentment, fear, sex, conduct, slapped it down on paper, withheld nothing. 3 hours later, I was done. Some guys will say, you can't write a fourth step in 3 hours, Dave. Well, color me wrong, but color me recovered. Worked. Well, next 2 days, I read my sponsor my fifth step. Only problem now is we're back at Logan. Our 3 days are up. He's about to jump on a plane to go back to Baltimore. I go, whoa, wait a minute. How are you going to sponsor me from Boston to Baltimore? How are you going to do that? Don't you have to pick me up, give me rides, lend me money, buy me cigarettes? How are you going to do that from Boston to Baltimore? I'm getting gypped, you know? Here's what he did, you guys. He pulls me close. He hugged me. He slides this book under my arm, and he whispers two words in my ear. He says, Dave, we got to trust God. We can do this. He says, I got to go home, man. I got to go home. And you got to fly. I got to drop you from the nest, and you just got to do it. You see, you've had it wrong for so long. You think you got to get your life in order before you can get out there and help God's other kids? No. You got to get out there and help God's other kids in order to get your life in order. And it begins now, now, now. You got 1 day of sobriety? Show the guy with no days how you got one. 7 days is the girl with two over here. Could you show how you got seven? 4 weeks, just 2 weeks. Could you do the four? Now, I'm not saying don't take them through the steps yet, you know, if you haven't been. Wait on that. But my God, can you help your brothers and sisters now? It all starts now. He says, you want to get to know God? He said, David, get to know his kids. Hang with his kids. Run with his kids. Reach out to help his other kids. You'll see God, hear God, and feel God in a place you never saw, felt, and heard him before. Steve got home that night. I called him. We finished the rest of the steps over the next 3 weeks over the phone. A man armed with the facts about himself and experience with the 12 steps. We did it over the phone. And guess what I got? Guess what I got? I got that spiritual awakening. It started to happen. The spirit that was so dead when I got here, flatlined dead standing in that courtroom that day, shackled at the ankles, waist, and wrists of 16 strangers. That flatlined dead spirit slowly started to come alive and awake. Not by what I see, saw, read, or studied, but rather what I started to do. My sponsor made it real clear. He said, every day is a day. Every day is a day you have to carry the vision of God's will into all your, every day. I don't stay clean on yesterday's shower. I don't stay fed on yesterday's meal. I'm not going to stay physically fit on yesterday's workout at the gym. I'm not staying spiritually fit on yesterday's action. If I want it today, I got to do it today, and it's just that simple. But when I do it every day, be it a little or a lot, when I do a little something every day, guess what happens, guys? I get to stay spiritually fit. And when I'm spiritually fit, check it out. There's nothing for a drink to fix. And I ain't looking for one. And that's the way it's been working for 12 years, 9 months, and a couple of days for me. And the greatest miracle, my obsession to drink and drug, bar none, the most powerfully destructive force in my life, bar none, has been removed. It's gone. I'm not here tonight fighting the fight. I'm not here tonight hanging in. I'm not shaking a monkey off my back. I'm not shooting for midnight. I've been set free. How? When? Where? When? When? What day did I wake up? Somewhere between July 21st, 2002, and here we stand tonight, September 15, 2014. Somewhere in this time stretch, somewhere in that span of time, I woke up one morning and found my obsession was lifted. When? 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 I have no idea. No clue. Why? Because I had nothing to do with it. I had nothing to do with it. That's the miracle of the 10th step. It just happens. One day, like my sponsor said, one day when I wasn't looking, God took it. I was saying about his business while he was taking care of mine. And that's how this thing works. I'm on the 12th step, 3 weeks into it with my sponsor. He's got me on the phone. He's in Baltimore. I'm in Boston. What are you doing tonight, Dave? I said, Steve, I'm going to a meeting downtown. He goes, okay, you want a little direction, a little direction? Want some direction? I said, what do you want me to do? He goes, here's what I want you to do tonight, Dave. I want you to change it up. Tonight when you walk in that meeting, I want you to change it up. Tonight when you walk in that meeting, instead of you walking in that meeting looking to see what you can take, because God knows you've been taking all your life, Tonight I want you to walk in that meeting. I want you to walk in, look and see what you can bring. I want you to find that new guy in the corner who's all by himself and let him know he never has to be alone again. Find that girl over there, third row center, shaking away. Let her know she never has to feel that way again. Because I want you to start talking about your recovery. I want you to start talking about your actions. I want you to start talking about these steps. I want you to start talking about what we've been doing for these last 3 weeks. You know what I want you to do tonight? He said, Dave, I want you to walk into that meeting. And I don't want you leaving until you find a man to sponsor. I said, you've got to be kidding me. You've got to be kidding me. You're down in Baltimore 8 years with that book in your hand and Tom Flynn beside you. I'm all by myself up here and only 3 weeks into it. I'm not ready for this, Steve. I'm not qualified. He says, David, I know you're not qualified and you know you're not qualified, but that new guy in the corner's got no clue you're not qualified. Now get over there and help him. And the guy's right. He's got no clue. I got no clue. I got no clue. What I got is my handout. And that's all he's got to see. Because the fact of the matter is, I am no more qualified than anyone in this room right here, right now, at this very moment, to carry this message. I'm no more qualified than my sponsor with his 25 years, or my grand sponsor with his 108 years, or whatever that white-haired guy had, I don't know. Why? Because God does not look for qualified men and women to carry his message. He looks for the willing. Are you willing? Well, like Tom Flynn said to me on so many occasions, are you a faithful trustee of the gift? Or do you got the busies? You got the busies, Dave? What's got you so damn busy? You're chasing the money, the property, the prestige. You had those before they fill the hole. He says, besides, Dave, I saw when you got out of detox, you didn't look too busy to me that day, you know? He was right all day long, right out of detox, nothing to do. So what's the message? It's real simple, you guys. We have a solution that works. The victory over alcohol happened June 10th, 1935, and here we are all these years later, and it's still active and working all the lives around us. If you're in a dark place drinking tonight, welcome. If you're in a dark place sober tonight, oh, welcome, I get it. Been there. We can walk you out of the darkness and into the sunlight. Come with us. There's things to do to get there. Let's not kind of call it what it is. There are things to do to get there, but we'll show you how, and they're not that hard. Matter of fact, they're really rather simple. You just got to take a few actions that you might not be used to taking, and I guarantee it's all going to change. Now, I'm looking at this clock. It's about 9:01. I'd like to sit down, but before I do, I want to share something with you I wrote with you guys in mind. If I close with this, I'd be honored. It's a little something I put together. So how can I now bring this talk to a close? This tumultuous tale of my highs and my lows, this heartfelt rendition of a life that once was destroyed by the things that a man like me does. Lost and alone, broken, bloody, and beat, near death but unwilling to admit my defeat, with my bottle near empty and unsure what to do, God picked me up and he brought me to you. And what did you do on the day I arrived, fresh from a nightmare I barely survived? You dusted me off without making a fuss and said, welcome home, Dave. Just stay here with us. And so started this journey from darkness to light, from that pitch black horizon. Your hope gave me sight. And once placed in your arms and touched by your hearts came that moment of grace when recovery starts. And so now it's my turn. I must now do the same. Though your face unfamiliar, though I know not your name, I still know all about you as I gaze in your eyes. We felt the same heartache, and we told the same lies. So come take our hands as we reach out to you. For as children of God, it's what we must do. It's what we must do, for in here we've been taught to keep what we're given. We give away what we got. So what is it we got that we've come here to give? We've come here to share the new lives that we live. There's miracles happening right here and right now. And the reason we've come here is to just show you how the hopeless find hope, how the blind get to see, how slaves to the drink are finally set free, how couples once split and how families once torn get brought back together, how lives are reborn. So if hope's what you're seeking, lay claim to that seat. But don't sit there for long. Let's start moving our feet. Let's move them together. You can't do this alone. This miracle's not one you'll find on your own. And to the sick and the suffering in this room here tonight, there's hope and salvation to your left and your right. And I stand now before you, quite remarkably sure that there's no group of people whom you'll respect more. There's a power we found that's both higher and real. Having once been without it, we know how you feel. New freedom awaits you. Please don't settle for less. It's yours for the asking. Good night, and God bless. Thank you.